Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and you can see us now every day right here. And I'm here to tell you that after being a journalist and a news presenter for four of the biggest television networks in the United States, I know what they do, and it isn't right because they don't give you context, by golly. And you know what? Frankly, I'm not sure they tell the truth. Here's what we're going to be talking about today. Truth bomb number one. President Biden's poll numbers are going from bad to worse. How low can they go? Truth bomb number two. He is trying to fix them, those poll numbers, by pretending to get tough on Israel, is Mr. Biden. However, Mr. Biden then goes and criticizes Bibi Netanyahu, and we'll show you what happens. Truth bomb number three. Netanyahu hears what Biden says and ridicules Mr. Biden, makes fun of him for criticizing him. There is one person who is getting worldwide attention right now for pointing out just how farcical what I just said is. He is a British member of parliament. He is George Galloway, and he will be joining us right here on Direct Impact. So let's get started with the kind of headlines that a lot of people here in the United States are seeing just about every day here in the United States. Poll numbers. Poll numbers that seem to show him, Mr. Biden, losing to former President Trump, and his approval numbers are nearing a dismal 60%. They're about 58 right now. There is no good news out of the Biden camp, out of these Biden numbers, which is why his staff seems to be panicking and making him do things like pretending to be taking on Bibi Netanyahu, like this.
Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical, so there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have, but there's red lines that if he crosses and they cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going after. There's other ways to deal, to deal with with the trauma caused by Hamas. The first time I went over, I sat with them and I sat with a war cabinet. I said, look, don't make the mistake America made. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden until we got him. But we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan.
So we shouldn't have got into Ukraine. I mean, well, there's the president of the United States, for what it's worth. And according to many polls, many Americans have reason to not like him anymore. But you know who should really like him? Heck, you know who should love him? Bibi Netanyahu should love him and his extreme right government as well. So surely when they go and they ask the prime minister about Mr. Biden, he's going to thank him for his unbridled support, for the billions of dollars that me and all of the other people who live here in the United States are sending him every single day, right? That's what Bibi Netanyahu's going to do, right? Well, no.
Well, I don't know exactly what the president meant. But if he meant by that, then I'm pursuing private policies against the majority, the wish of the majority of Israelis, and that this is hurting the interests of Israel, then he's wrong on both counts.
Mr. Prime Minister, so you took the decision, you're 100% sure that you go into Rafah?
Oh, we'll go there. We're not going to leave them. You know, I have a red line. You know what the red line is? That October 7th doesn't happen again.
He's literally making fun of President Biden's red line with his own red line. And there you have it. I mean, man, nothing like biting the hand that feeds you, no? I mean, what are we to make of that? By the way, is it even okay to criticize Mr. Netanyahu without him calling you an anti-Semite, which is why most are afraid to confront him? I mean, is that really being an anti-Semite, by the way, or is Netanyahu just a bit of a bully? This is a question that a lot of people are asking, or should I say, whispering. There is one person who I've known now for a long time who is not whispering his criticism. He is shouting it from the mountaintop. And because of that, he has now won a seat in the House of Commons. And because of that, he's also being pilloried right now. I want to introduce you once again to George Galloway, writer, broadcaster, someone that, frankly, I happen to think is one of the most impressive thinkers of our time. And now, once again, a member of the British Parliament. The Honorable George Galloway joins us here on Direct Impact. Is it okay if I still call you George?
Rick Sanchez, as I live and breathe, this is like the Oscar night for me, being back on television with you. So you can call me anything that you like. George is great.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. So let's start with this, George. I was flabbergasted when I watched Netanyahu's reaction to Mr. Biden. Biden is desperate right now. He's just trying to get people to like him again. So he's saying, maybe if I'm hard on Bibi, they'll like me again. And Bibi basically tells him to, you know what? What do you make of that?
Yeah. Well, you know, not many people have read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein right to the end. When you make a monster, the point is, once you've made it, it's no longer yours. It's a monster and can do monstrous things. And that's what they have done with Netanyahu and people like him, who now run Israel and who are armed to the teeth with American weaponry, brim full of American taxpayers' money, and now like owning one of these dangerous dogs, you know, these savage pit bull dogs. You think it's your pet, but it decides where it's going to go, how far it's going to go, whom it is going to savage next. And that's exactly now what's happening. They have already given all the aid that Israel needs to break all of Joe Biden's red lines, even if they were red lines. And there's many reasons to doubt that. I mean, for example, the building of this port, when there are thousands of aid trucks on the other side of a gate that I've passed through. So often, all Biden would have to say is, open the gate, Mr. Netanyahu, and let the aid in so the children can stop starving to death. But he hasn't done that. He's gone for a 6 to 8 week project, 1,000 U.S. Military personnel in the Gaza Strip. Rick, what could possibly go wrong? 1,000 American soldiers in Gaza. What could possibly go wrong? So there are reasons to doubt that he's giving red lines anyway, but if he is, as you've just shown, they're being contemptuously ignored.
What do you say to Americans, and what do you say to British citizens, for example, who must be asking themselves, why, if we're sending them money, why, if we are doing all of these things, which many of us question, and some have the right to question, are they treating us as if they own us and they're giving us rather than we are giving them? But what do you say to the average person out there? And is that the question you use to get elected, George?
Well, it's one of the issues on which I was elected, and the British media alleged that I was fighting a British parliamentary election on Gaza. I wasn't, but if I was, then Gaza won. I crushed all the other parties. The government party, the opposition party, the third opposition party, the fourth opposition party. I got more votes than all of them put together. It was a crushing victory. So if I was fighting on Gaza, then Gaza won. I used to say to them, would you have criticized me if this election was happening in 1941, putting the Holocaust to the front of my election campaign, mm-hmm. talking about the horrors being suffered by Jews and others, gypsies, gay people, all the people who were persecuted in that Holocaust? Why would that be a dishonorable thing to do? And the thing is, now we've all got it on our phone, Rick. We don't have to wait for vague and unsubstantiated assertions about what's going on in this death camp that is the Gaza Strip. Our children are watching it on their telephones and asking us what we are going to do about it, what we are saying about it. So the truth is that when you, I go back to my Frankenstein analogy, because you did another one, so did we with Ukraine. Ukraine treats us now as if we owe them rather than them having been on the end of endless subventions of money and material. Now the Ukrainian leadership insults the people that gave them so much hundreds or billions of dollars in your case in the United States, and plenty here in London also. So, you know, these used to call these things client states. But here we have a situation where the client tells the boss what to do. The client tells the paymaster what to do. And if you even hint that you might cut back on the money and materiel, well, they try to interfere in your domestic politics. Mm-hmm. You talk about election interference. Rick, you and I spoke about this so many times on the false Russiagate affair. Is Israel interfering in American politics or not? Every American citizen knows the answer to that question.
Yeah, it's called money that is given to politicians to vote a certain way. They're not the only ones, but they certainly are in the bunch. Yeah. By the way, you talked about what happens to somebody who comes out and says the kinds of things that you say that many people are afraid to say. I want to show people what happens to someone who says the kinds of things that you say. This is a video that has pretty much gone global, if not very viral. It is you, just a few weeks ago, with a reporter who, instead of coming to you and asking you questions about you being victorious in this election, takes a different manner. Here it is.
Do you not respect the Prime Minister?
Do I respect the Prime Minister? I despise the Prime Minister. And guess what? Guess what? Millions and millions and millions of people in this country despise the Prime Minister. I don't respect the Prime Minister at all.
Fill that in for us, because it was an incredible moment in that it seemed like this young buck reporter, God bless him, had decided that you were being a bit of an outcast. And how would you buck and question the system? And how dare you, George Galloway, question those people who are really in the system, like their Prime Minister? And your response was epic. Fill us in with what happened there.
Yeah, someone said when the bell rang, I picked him up, turned him upside down, and mopped the floor with him. And it has gone viral. But by the way, Rick, he's no young buck. It's just that they're all young bucks now. The media is full of teenage scribblers with no historical memory of any kind. They think that a story started the moment that the television crews arrived. Mm. But of course, stories are years, decades in the making. And it's important that people of experience and with some wisdom are able to correct them. He is one of the most serious and heavyweight of the British political television pundits nowadays. That's how bad things are. But you saw there what was, for several days, it's died down a bit now, an attempt to anathematize me.
Yes.
To delegitimize my victory. But of course, in doing that, they were anathematizing the thousands and thousands of people who voted for me. And that's just not very democratic. If you believe in democracy, you have to respect the choices that the people make, whether you like who they elected or not. And President Trump will face the same thing after November, and faced it indeed in his first term, the basket of deplorables type of approach. Mm-hmm. You'll remember Mrs. Clinton's phrase. They think that inside the beltway, inside the bubble of Western media political class, that they are where it's at. And anyone who is not with them is a part of that basket of deplorables. Yep. So in this case, they couldn't accept that I, whom they had demonized throughout the whole campaign, had emerged not just victorious, but had swept the floor with all the other parties. They couldn't accept it. So they then set out to, as I say, anathematize me, if that's not too Roman Catholic a word.
Well, you know, there's something going on, and I'm going to take a quick break right now, but when we come back, I want to talk about this. There's something going on in this world right now. And the thing that's happening, George, is that people are changing in that perspective, in that there's guys like Tucker Carlson now who are giving a different perspective. There are people like you, George Galloway, who are giving a different perspective. And how is that going to change us? Will it? And will the other side give in? These are kind of the things that I want to talk about when we come back with none other than George Galloway. You stay right there. We're going to be right back.
Seem wrong, when old rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Мы сегодня на прифронтовом аэродроме.
Не вставать, ползком сюда!
Вот так сейчас выглядит пригород Мариуполя.
Первый раз поехать в зону СВО, не посмотрев вот эти мастер-классы, мне кажется, это как, не знаю, управлять автомобилем без водительского удостоверения.
Опыт нужен, но у меня нет такого опыта.
Около 9 лет я снимаю боевые действия на Донбассе. Попал в плен к украинским военным.
Много раз был в зоне боевых действий.
Я освещаю военные конфликты.
Там я почувствовал вот именно атмосферу, такой звенящий воздух, напряженный, когда ты понимаешь, что ну, здесь реально опасно.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. I am so happy to be talking to someone who I had gotten to know quite well here, George Galloway, for a couple of reasons. First of all, because I admire the way he thinks, and I think he is truly an intellectual, not in a highfalutin way, but just a guy who thinks a lot and thinks properly. The other thing is, George Galloway is a truth teller. He says many of the things that too many of us are afraid to say, and for that, we appreciate the fact that he's now a new MP for Rochdale and a friend of this show. George, I want to get to the thing that we were just talking about, or actually you were mentioning, and that is there's something going on right now where people are brave enough to stand up and do things that in the past we wouldn't do. I have another guy who's also a friend of mine. His name is Tucker Carlson, and he does a lot of interviews lately, and he and I have worked together for many years at CNN and at Fox, and he and I speak a lot these days, and we chat with each other, and when he was interviewing Mr. Putin, I remember that when he was done, he got pilloried. They destroyed him for simply sitting and asking the man the questions that he did. The interview went on for like an hour and a half, and it was almost as if he was being told the next day by all the Western media sources, how dare you even talk to him or allow people to hear his voice? What did you make of that?
Well, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Tucker Carlson is getting viewer numbers that are simply on another level, multiple other level, from the so-called mainstream broadcasters in the ailing, failing corporate sector. And that's because he is asking the questions that people want asked, but which the prevailing orthodoxy media simply won't ask and allow alternative point of views to be heard. And you and I are achieving not Tucker Carlson levels of numbers, but very big numbers for exactly the same reason. And I think the era that we are now in, you see, you and I grew up in a time when you had to be, you know, Ted Turner or Rupert Murdoch to own a television outlet. But I came here today with my studio in a bag, and it wasn't even a particularly heavy bag. The costs of entry into media now have plummeted so low that people with by the grace of God, the ability to speak and the ideas that people find interesting and want to hear, we are able to reach audiences now that we would hitherto have been dependent on Rupert Murdoch to reach. And of course, the prevailing orthodoxy was policed by the owners of these big legacy media outlets. That's all gone now. I mean, the day will come when, you know, my small children can carry my studio in the bag, and I can sit down at a table, as I've done with you now, and you and I are talking across the Atlantic to a substantial number of people.
Millions.
Who will be at least interested, even if they're not persuaded. They'll be interested to have heard our exchange. And that's something that the legacy media dogs cannot accept. But the dogs bark. The caravan is well and truly moving on.
Everybody I read, well, I shouldn't say everybody. Many of your critics say that you're going to be a one-trick pony. You got in, and soon you'll be out, and your whole existence there in Parliament is going to be not so important. What do you say to those folks who say that you and your message and the people who supported you are nothing more than a one-trick pony?
Well, as George W. Bush once put it, they've misunderestimated me. This is my seventh term in Parliament. Seven times I've been elected, three of those times against the main parties of the state. I and Mr. Churchill, believe that or not, are the only people in British history to represent four different towns and cities in the British Parliament. This is my seventh term, but eight is my lucky number. So I'm looking forward, whenever Prime Minister Sunak has the courage to call the election, to an eighth, I hope final, because, you know, I am getting on, but an eighth term is what I aim to have. And it is, I think, highly likely that I'll be returned as the Member of Parliament for Rochdale. They said I'd only talk about Gaza, but I made my maiden speech yesterday, which is now viral, and you can find it on all platforms, and I didn't mention Gaza once. I talked about Rochdale. They said I had no interest in Rochdale or connection with it, but I displayed in 6 minutes of vintage maiden speech material a level of detail, knowledge, and concern, compassion for the situation in Rochdale that nobody has for decades in the Parliament on their behalf. So one by one, I'm shooting all their foxes, as we say here. It was, of course, a bitter blow for them that I was elected. They never expected to see me in Parliament again, but they have to suck it up, Rick.
Well, you said something interesting, and I'm wondering whether you said it because you really mean it or whether you were just trying to make a point. When you say you despise the Prime Minister, do you really despise him, or were you trying to make the point to British citizens that just because he has that title, he's not that big a deal and no more important than the rest of them?
No, I mean, as a religious person, I don't normally speak in such strong terms, personal terms.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid that we have a prime minister who is truly despicable. He's an unelected prime minister. He was attacking my election when nobody has ever voted for him. He's our prime minister when not even his own members of parliament got the chance to vote for him. He was the product of a backroom deal produced by him stabbing in the back his predecessor and his predecessor before that, Boris Johnson, then Liz Truss, were both stabbed in the back by Rishi Sunak. And I've joked to you before, and I mean it as a joke. Most British people on the right, conservatives, think we should still be ruling India, not that an Indian should be ruling us. And so that's why he couldn't go for an election, because they wouldn't have picked him. They'd have picked anybody other than him if there had been an election in the Conservative Party for him. He is a billionaire, I mean billionaire, with a US green card in his pocket. His wife is a non-dom, offshore, paying no tax in Britain on her millions of pounds of earnings. There's much to despise him about. But the bad news for you is, the minute he's elected out of number 10 Downing Street, he'll be on a plane to California, coming to Silicon Valley, and a television camera crew near you.
Near you, exactly. Oh, I wish we weren't out of time, but we are. But we'll have another opportunity to talk. We didn't even hit China. We didn't talk about the South China Sea. Sure. We really didn't talk about India relations with the United States and with Great Britain. We didn't talk enough about Ukraine. These are all topics that we're going to get to, because I know you have so much to say. But it really is, my friend, a pleasure to be able to reunite with you once again. And let's do it again. Thank you, George.
Pleasure was mine, Rick. Great to see you again.
Before we go, I want to remind you of something. Our mission, really, it's simple. I kind of want to de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes. Because you know what? Truths don't live in boxes. They're everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. That's how I see it. And I'll be looking for you again right here, where we hope to provide a direct impact.